Muslims. You know they want to friend you. They'll order from the menu and charm your invite list. So bring them along.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 10th of October. Our guests this hour believe there is an urgent need to extinguish, demolish, and generally get rid of that totally awful, frequently violent, and generally irritating phenomenon known as Islamophobia. And while they're at it, to do away with bigotry in general, because it's 2013, after all. What they really wanted to do was assign everyone in the country a Muslim friend, but after crunching the numbers for a solid 1 to 3 minutes, they realized there aren't enough Muslims to go around, so instead, they decided to put together a movie. Very talented comedians who traveled to many southern cities and towns, plus Tucson and Salt Lake City, using comedy to combat Islamophobia. They do stand-up routines, they put up booths, ask a Muslim, they give quizzes, they recruit audiences outside gun shows, and even shoot guns at the neighborhood range, all in the name of bridge building and communal laughs. Two of the comedians who happen to be the co-directors and producers of The Muslims Are Coming are with us this hour, and we're delighted to have them join us from studios, NPR studios in New York City. Nagin Farsad is an Iranian-American policy advisor turned social justice comedian, was just awarded a TED Fellowship and gave a talk, the kind where you have a PowerPoint presentation and wear a face microphone thingy, she says. She's written for and performed on BBC's News Quiz, MTV's Detox, PBS's 1001 Nights, Comedy Central's The Watch List, also co-created Nickelodeon's Class Parents and appeared as a sci-fi nerd in Nick's Mom's Watch, was the recipient of the Lifetime Television's Women in Filmmaking Awards. She has a lengthy resume, so I'm not totally doing it justice, but in the interest of time, that's what we give you about her. She's very funny, so you'll just have to believe me. She's very funny. You're very funny, Nagin. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Dean Obladalla is also with us. At one time, he was a practicing attorney. He co-starred in Comedy Central's Axis of Evil stand-up special. He has appeared on many TV shows, The View, Comics Unleashed, NBC's Rock Center. He offers commentary weekly on CNN and writes a weekly opinion column for CNN.com, is a contributor to Newsweek's The Daily Beast, co-creator of the New York Arab American Comedy Festival, which will celebrate its 10th anniversary, or maybe already has this year, and co-created the comedy show Stand Up for Peace. Dean, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks. That's an amazing intro. That is, thank you. I'm blushing right now.
I can't see, but, well, and I only did a little bitty part of it. I could have gone on.
Continue,
on and on.
Though. I'll wait. You can read all of it. We have an hour to kill. So read everything. Go to Wikipedia if that suits you.
And make sure it's right. But let me tell both of you that the film really is very funny. And it's a good thing to do, isn't it, to take on bigotry, Islamophobia in this case, with some humor, because humor works.
It does. I mean, it really, the thing about it is that you just can't be mad at someone who's like telling jokes. I think that's kind of what it is. It melts down your defenses and it makes you just feel okay. And it just kind of opens you up. And in that window where the audience feels open, you might be able to just shove in like a tiny bit of education.
Absolutely. I must say, at the beginning of the film, when I saw where you were going, I thought, ooh, this doesn't bode well. I spent a lot of years living in the South, and things have changed. That was many years ago. But didn't you think you were being a little bit brave going to the Deep South to do comedy about Muslims?
Unbelievably courageous. I thought I should get a Purple Heart. That was what a scary proposition to go to other parts of America. No, actually, it wasn't. I don't think it's brave to go to other parts of the United States of America and speak to our fellow Americans of different faiths. I think, though, other people made me, before we went, made me a little anxious, and I'm already neurotic, but anxious about going down there because they were saying things to us, including we were renting our equipment, and there's a big Italian-American guy who worked there and was just saying, you're going to have security? You're going to be okay down there? And some people made us more concerned. I thought we'd face a little bit more bigotry to our face, a little bit more, not a lot. It takes a confident bigot to say something to your face. But, you know, we face a little bit, but we face more questions. And that's really what why we went. We wanted to answer people's questions.
I think you say at the end of the film, Nagin, that actually you were fairly warmly welcomed wherever you went.
Yeah, I mean, people were really, really nice to us. I mean, like, there were some, you know, awkward moments with people telling us to go back to our own country, whatever. That, for me, is California. Dean is from New Jersey, so I think he has
that
more
is another
to...
country,
yeah,
yes.
There's a little more there. But I think... So there were moments that we were, like, a little not treated terribly well. But by and large... people were super, super welcoming, really open. People came out to the shows in droves. We would set up booths around the country in different town squares, like an Ask a Muslim booth and whatnot. And people would stop by and ask us questions. And I think we were so warmly welcomed. But the other thing is, like, we weren't going out there to find, like, the jerks of America. You know, we really wanted to build bridges with people and make friends with people. And I feel like if you go into it with that kind of attitude, you're going to get that back.
Yeah. But you even went so far as to recruit audiences outside a gun show. And then you went mm-hmm. to shoot a gun. I love the scene with you shooting the gun. I would have been in the same boat you were. That's a scary thing to do.
Horrifying.
But we wanted to meet people. I mean, there's a point in time where you hear enough bigotry directed at your group, whatever ethnicity or you know, religion you might be or race you might be, and you say you want to do something to counter this and to try to diminish it. And to us, we just use our skills as comics. And all the shows we did were for free, which is part of the reason a lot of people showed up. But that was part of the goal. Because if you charge people, let's be honest, you're only going to get people supporting you to come to a show where they're paying. Now, if it's free, there is some self-selection, but I think you're going to reach out to some that were curious, and that was our hope. And then the street action, of course, was free, and we just went right where they lived or they were worked and set up tables and walked around and tried to answer questions from people. And overwhelmingly, Americans are open-minded, but there is suspicion, and there is an odd concern about Muslims, even though we represent about 1% of the nation, that somehow we're going to take over this country. And look, I'm all down with taking over, but we don't have the numbers for it. So it's not going to happen. So I hope people would relax about that part.
Let's hear a little bit. You talked about Ask a Muslim. They put up booths in some of these towns, and people could just come and ask a Muslim questions. Here's a little bit of what's in the film, and we'll go further when we ask them about some of the questions.
Well, you're dressed like an American.
Yeah. I am an American.
Okay.
Yeah, and, I'm American Iranian.
You know, there's only one kind of American, and that's America. Right. My ancestors are from Holland,
uh-huh.
but I don't claim to be a Dutch American.
Right.
I'm an American American.
Right.
To me, if you want to be a part of this country, you just got to be a part of it.
Tell me why I haven't seen Muslims who are not extremists criticizing the Muslims who are being extreme.
Why are not the people of peace speaking out against the people that are doing these things?
You heard that one over and over. Why aren't the peaceful Muslims really speaking out more, particularly about 9/11? Was that one of the more common questions, Nagin?
We got that question so frequently. And I think part of the problem is that people just have never seen a Muslim denounce terrorism. And that's because I think despite the fact that so many Muslim groups do it, I mean, kind of all the time and after anything that might happen, it's not the kind of fun news that you carry. It's like, oh, a bunch of reasonable people are denouncing violence. That doesn't really make headlines. And if you're if all you get is like mainstream news, you're not going to get anything but negative depictions of Islam and Muslims and, you know, dudes carrying AK-47s and that look really angry. So you're not going to see people denouncing terrorism, even though that is, in fact, what, you know, Muslims do all the time. And we are thinking maybe we should set up some sort of like daily tweet or a Tumblr or I don't know if there's something we can do that just kind of has like a regular presence of denouncing terrorism, then maybe we'll do that.
A daily tweet might be good. Yeah, go ahead, dude.
And the flip side, though, is something that Asif Manvi, who's in the movie and he's from The Daily Show, he's the Brown correspondent, raised another response within our communities that why should I denounce these people I have no connection with? I don't know these terrorists. They don't actually share my faith. They claim to be Muslims. They're not doing things in accordance with Islam. They're out there killing innocent people. So why am I called upon to respond to them. And so we have that split within our community. Many, you know, we all denounce terrorism, but the question is some think we should. And others are like, no, I don't demand Christians denounce bad Christians. I don't demand Jews to denounce bad Jews. Why should we have to denounce Muslims who live in Pakistan or Kenya or wherever they might be in this world? Because our burden is not just American Muslims. Apparently, I've been told I have to respond to every Muslim who does anything bad across the entire planet. That's a full-time job. I have to quit my job. I have to denounce all day.
It's funny, like people, I think a lot of Americans think that Muslims have like a super Facebook, like a maxed out Facebook where we just are super connected to each other. But it's untrue. Those rumors completely unfounded. We're here to denounce rumors that we have any kind of connection with Muslims
no
that we
meetings,
have no connection to.
No club. And there's different sects
no
within Islam
signal.
That don't
no,
even get along with each other. So, I mean, like...
no secret handshake.
Not yet.
Not yet. There also is some fairly crazy things that are said by people, and we'll play some of those. But this idea that... who used these statistics? I can't remember in the film where so much of a percentage of Americans are Muslim, and then there are such a percentage of that
Buster
percentage
Wilson.
That are Islamists. And so there have to be 40,000 or 4,000 or whatever it is.
40,000. 40,000 Muslims in America who want to kill you. That was Buster Wilson from the American Family Association, who was a very nice guy and did not say that in an angry tone. Said it in a much more thoughtful way, in a way that will convince people. And that's what's more alarming about that. He'll say 1% of Muslims in America want to kill us. 1% of that is 40,000. Bingo, 40,000 Muslims are walking around who want to kill you. You don't know which one, so let's, you know, discriminate against all of them and say they're all bad, because you never know which of that 1% you're going to meet.
Now, you went in to meet with him. You had previously sent a communication and that you didn't get a response, so you just walked in to the American Family Council. He was actually rather nice. He said, you know, y'all come back whenever you want, which was,
well,
was amazing.
We were trying to ply him with cookies. What you may not have noticed from that shot is that we were offering him cookies. And so we were very friendly. Everyone was very friendly. And our point wasn't to go in there and be like, why didn't you have us on the show? You know, explain yourself. Why do you hate Muslims? You know, but our point was really to just have a conversation and say, you know, you guys sling a lot of stuff on your shows. And, you know, why do you do that? There's plenty of things, you know, in the Bible that you could pull out of context and say, you know, so that was kind of the point. And it was like Dean said, it was a very friendly interaction, and to hear a reasonable person say things like, well, you know, 1%, we don't think 99% of Muslims are a problem, it's only the 1%. And then you think just numerically, like, that becomes it, just to hear how reasonable the reasonableness with which they make these claims makes them sound so true, which is what's so scary.
Right. The point is made, and I think it's really valid. As I was watching the movie, I was thinking, you know, I don't think I've seen very many Muslim comics, and I've seen Jewish comics, African American. You make the point that there has been a wave after wave of minorities in this country that have used stand-up comedy to become more mainstream, to kind of poke fun at themselves and to let people know who they are. And there hasn't been, is it your time? Is it the Muslims' time for the new wave of comedy?
I hope so. There actually are – there's a small number but growing number of Muslim American comedians. And there was a tour before called Allah Made Me Funny, and Preacher Moss was in our film, was one of the stars of that, which was a documentary years ago. There's a growing number, but it's still – you know, you're talking about maybe 8 or 10 who are full-time comics who are Muslim. It might even be less than that, frankly. And I think in time you will see more, and I think it's a great vehicle – to use, because so many minority groups before us have used comedy effectively to raise issues, make people laugh, dispel stereotypes, and sort of, you know, we're all in this together. Let's laugh together. I think there's so much, such a benefit of laughing together in a room, a diverse room of people.
And yeah. But the numbers are just, I mean, honestly, the numbers are not there. We'll never be as numerous as, like, you know, Black and Latino comics. It's just not possible with the number of Muslims that are in the country. But I do think that institutional forces really kind of have a responsibility to give other voices a chance to have a place in the mainstream. I mean, you think about, you know, shows like Will and Grace and Ellen and what they did for the gay rights movement. I mean, I think they were fundamental to the gay rights movement. And where we are right now with marriage equality, we wouldn't have been, could have seen this coming 10 years ago if it wasn't for the cultural place that so many beloved, you know, fictional gay characters have had on mainstream television. And I think if networks start listening to that and start giving minorities the same kind of, opportunities, then, you know, we're going to see a lot more beloved Muslim characters on television. It's time. It's time for that.
That's your goal in life, both of you, beloved Muslim characters. I'm a beloved Muslim character. That's all right. That's a good life goal. I'm interested in both of your backgrounds because if you read your resumes, you start with Nagin, I was an Iranian-American policy advisor. You studied government at Cornell. You have a graduate degree in public policy and African-American studies. And now you're a beloved Muslim comic. How did that happen?
Well, I think, you know, my parents are sort of typical immigrants in that they, you know, expected, you know, really good grades from me. And luckily, like, I was a super duper nerd and I was really into, you know, academics. And so I ended up, you know, doing all of the getting the Ivy League degrees and doing all that stuff and making them happy in terms of, like, you know, diplomas. But I really believed in the work of public policy, and it was my goal from as a young girl. I was like, oh, I'm going to be president of the United States. No big deal that I'm a Muslim girl. Not a problem. I'm going to do it. I'm going to end the racial divide. It's going to be my thing. And that drove me through, you know, to graduate degrees and work as, you know, and into a policy advisor job with the city of New York. But the entire time I was doing comedy, that never, you know, that was kind of on the, not even a back burner, it was like a side burner. Where I was just doing comedy at night. And at a certain point, it became kind of inappropriate because I would go, you know, to city council meetings or whatever and present facts and statistics and be very like an adult. And then at night I would go do stand up. And so, my friend staged an intervention and were like, you want to be a comedian? What are you doing? And it was true. I did. And it was hard for me because comedy feels like such a narcissistic, self-serving profession. And I didn't want that. I wanted to be a part of social justice. And so for me, it was really important to be able to wrap social justice into my work, which is like why I do stuff like this movie or like right. I went to Cayman Islands and to look for offshore banks from American millionaires and, you know, all of these types of weird things that I do on various issues. You know, I do it in the name of comedy and in the name of social justice.
And Dean, you were a practicing attorney.
Yes, I was.
And then?
And I was disbarred. It's horrible. No, I wasn't disbarred.
No.
I didn't enjoy the law at all. I like law school. I think education is a great thing to have. And I was practicing as an attorney in a New Jersey bigger firm, law firm, and I got a job at NBC as a page to make $10 an hour where you just walk around and give tours and serve coffee to important people and stuff like that. And then I got hired at Saturday Night Live after that, and I worked at Saturday Night Live for 7 years doing rights and clearance, which was legal related, but it wasn't on the legal stuff. It was actually for the show and the production end. And I learned a great deal about comedy because I'd gone to comedy graduate school for those years and learned about TV and production. So it was really thrilling. And, you know, I always enjoyed making people laugh. I didn't enjoy practicing law, suing people. And I just took a chance years ago and I figured I could always go back to being a lawyer if I had to. And hopefully I will not have to. But education is great. And it's been a fun journey. And like Nagin, I like to use comedy to try to raise issues of substance, because if it was just jokes, I think I would have gotten bored with it a long time ago. Mm-hmm.
We welcome phone calls for both our guests. You probably haven't had a chance to see the film yet. As far as I know, it hasn't opened in Wisconsin. Can you check on that? I don't think it's open, but it's in major cities close to us, including Chicago. We're speaking with the co-directors, producers, and featured comedians in The Muslims Are Coming, which is very funny, and talking about minority groups trying to combat Islamophobia and bigotry, really, in general. They go to lot of southern cities, and they also go to Tucson and to Salt Lake City, where I think they had the best time. They were the most welcome in Salt Lake City. They do stand-up comedy. They put up a booth, Ask a Muslim. They have religious quizzes. What do you know about the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Bible? And it's very well done. So That's what we're talking about this hour. Would you like to join us? You can. You can ask a Muslim if you would like, or you can talk about minorities using comedy as catharsis and also as a way of understanding and combating bigotry in this country. I think there have been waves of that. There also are some famous people who are featured in the film, not that our guests aren't famous, but people like Jon Stewart and Rachel Maddow and others are there to talk about the importance of comedy in combating stereotypes and in combating bigotry. So here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and that's that. And our guests are Nagin Farsad and Dean Obadallah. They are featured in this film, The Muslims Are Coming. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the film, The Muslims Are Coming, this hour of the program with the co-directors and producers trying to combat Islamophobia in this country through comedy. And here are some of the reasons that the film needed to be done. These comments are featured in their film.
Did you know that the turkey you're going to enjoy on Thanksgiving Day this Thursday is probably halal? Halal means it's been ritually sacrificed according to the Quran.
Make no mistake about it, Islam is a violent religion.
These are young, angry terrorists who want to kill you, and they want to kill me, and you know it. Stop with the PC crap.
Every single butterball turkey sold in the United States of America has been sacrificed to Allah.
I'm sorry, that butterball thing gets me every time I hear it. Oh, that is I mean, it's not funny, but it is funny, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Funny,
it's amazing.
Yeah. And that's Brian Fisher from the American Film Association, and we try to get on his radio show.
Oh. So how much of this craziness is out there? Is it dominating a certain segment of media or what?
I think that it's not dominated. I don't think when we walk around the country, Nagin and I found out, and the other comedians, the average person is not walking around going, "I hate Muslims." But there is use of Islamophobia, and I don't really like that term. I like it. I just call it Muslim hating, because it's Muslim haters, just like people who are anti-Semitic hate Jews. There are people who just hate Muslims. It's used by some political figures, unfortunately, and usually on the right. I have not seen anyone on the left use it. In fact, just in North Carolina, a couple of months ago, they passed anti-Sharia law legislation. There are almost no Muslims in North Carolina, yet the Republicans there wanted to pass a law to make sure Islamic law cannot be imposed. There are no Muslims trying to impose Islamic law. But by getting people afraid of an enemy, a phantom menace, and they're going to take credit then for saving you from it, that's what we see going on. So you see politicians on the right, and you only see Fox News really is the only place left where these Muslim haters get a platform. And we try to get the Fox News people on our movie, and we try to do it in the best way as a conversation. We told them we were not going to embarrass them. We went through all the proper channels, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Judge Napolitano. Everyone said, no, no, no. They don't want to have a discussion with us. They'd rather demonize us than engage us. And that's what's unfortunate at this point where we are.
Yeah. And I definitely think that there's, you know, it's interesting the where bigotry stands these days and how it manifests itself. You know, for example, yesterday I was in Centralia, Washington, and it's a really small town. We were doing a screening at Centralia College there, and there were people. There was like a Christian group standing in front of the theater handing out flyers, and I think they were just concerned that people were coming to see this movie, which is kind of hilarious because if you've seen the movie. I think, as you can corroborate, it's ultimately, it's really fun. No one's trying to convert anyone. There's no, I mean, Muslims don't do that anyway, but so there's no, like, kind of concern that you're going to lose Christians to this movie, you know what I mean? But you know, there are people standing out there doing that, and they were very concerned. So I think what's happening is if you tell people that they need to fear something, and if that's what they're hearing a lot, you know, and if they happen to be, you know, listening to Fox and they're getting this message, but even if you're listening to other networks, like for example, when Obama, the birther thing that went on for years. years that whether or not he was a Muslim. I think to ask that like it's an accusation, like it's a concern, like that we should be fearful about it, that it's a discussion that we should have, and that happened on every network, makes it feel like, oh my God, what are we losing members? Are we? What's happening? I'm worried.
Yeah.
And so then it turns into people, you know, worried. Standing outside of a Muslims are coming screening, handing out flyers and worried that people are going to turn into sinners or whatever.
Or worse, Muslims.
Or convert. And it was funny to me because also like at the screening, they were handing out candy. The people who ran the screening were handing out candy. It's a comedy. Like you're supposed to enjoy it. You're supposed to munch on popcorn and listen and have a good time and also hear the message. And so there's really nothing to be concerned about. There's really nothing to write attack articles about. We've had 3 attack articles on the trailer. On the trailer, there were attack articles. And these people had not seen the movie. And my favorite was in the Washington Times. They referred to me throughout the article as Mr. Farsad.
Oh.
So because they couldn't imagine that a woman would have the wherewithal to make a movie worth attacking. So it was like a kind of a misogyny Islamophobia sandwich. But these are the kind of things we're seeing that are just so they're funny. Ultimately, the way butterball turkeys are.
Yeah. Well, that ignorance is what is appalling. That kind of total ignorance just is difficult to handle. Let's go to some phone calls. Kenneth in Spring Green. Hi, Kenneth.
Hey, hi. I love this show. This is great stuff. I appreciate what the guests are doing to try and help get past this fear. There's a wall of fear between Muslim and non-Muslim Americans. And I wonder whether, you know, comedy can open the door, but ultimately, to tear down this wall, aren't we going to have kind of a factual discussion about such things as, well, the fact that terrorism is less of a threat than lightning bolts and bathtub drownings, that Muslims only commit 6% of terrorist attacks in the U.S., according to the FBI, and that, according to all of about a dozen polls since 9/11, about 2/3 of American Muslims don't believe the official story of 9/11, and they're backed up by thousands of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
I mean, it's an interesting conversation to have about that, and I think that statistics are part of the argument for us in talking about the small threat that Islam terrorists who happen to be Muslim or claim to be Muslim are. But I think that it's not an intellectual discussion we're having with people. It's much more visceral. And there's a fear that they have because they've seen attacks. And if you don't know a Muslim and all you see on TV is a drumbeat of terrorist attacks by someone who claims to be Muslim or looks Muslim, you're going to be afraid. If I was not Muslim and if I saw this drumbeat of negative stories, I would have concerns too. So I think the intellectual part, you raise some great points, and I think that's something that in a conversation you can have with people, but I think it's more visceral and getting through their fear and trying to get to the heart of what the problem is. And I think it's exposure. I think they don't know any Muslims. They just hear negative things. So it's reasonable to think the worst of us. And that's what the whole tour was about and the project. And so many Muslim American groups are doing interfaith work now more than ever, which is really great. You know, and we have Jews and Christians standing with us and even atheists investing in our film. We've had our film represents what I think the melting pot of America is. Our investors range from openly gay man who's not Muslim. Most investors are not Muslim, to the Jews, to atheists, to people of all backgrounds. Because as you said, Kathleen, this movie's not really about Muslims. It's really about fighting bigotry.
Right.
And that's what we need. We need allies, the good people, the similarists. Like Martin Luther King talked about, it's not the clamor of the bad people that's going to be the judge of your record as a generation. It's the silence of the good people. And we cannot have good people silent anymore. We need you to stand with us like we are going to stand with those who want marriage equality. We're going to stand with immigration rights because together we have to fight this collectively as people who have a vision of this nation, which is a melting pot still. It's vibrant and that minorities should have the same rights, religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, all the same. And so we're fighting this greater fight. It just happens to be we're Muslim and using this film to raise those points.
Thank you.
And it's interesting, your caller mentioned the statistics from the FBI about 6% of terrorist acts, whatever. And it is so visceral that even a statistic like that doesn't necessarily get translated into rational action in security enforcement. In New York City, for example, Muslims are, it's a large-scale surveillance of Muslims throughout the greater New York City area. And that's what what we know of. You know, I don't know what else is going on around the country. But what we know is happening for sure is that Muslims are being – that there's surveillance of Muslims in New York. And that – it doesn't make sense, you know, when you look at statistics. So it's such an emotional issue that the emotion even infiltrates, you know, who are supposed to be rational players in our, you know, national security.
Yeah. Muhammad is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Muhammad.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I was just listening to the program, and I just want to say salam to the guests. I'm really looking forward to checking this film out, and I agree with a lot of the points that the guests were making. One thing in particular, when they were speaking about myself, actually, I was first generation. You know, my parents are originally from Iraq, grew up here, live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I think within my circle of friends, I think we have always tried to find humor in certain things, I guess, with the stereotypes and perceptions of how Muslims are, especially the younger generations. I think we try to take a more comical or more humorous approach with how we're perceived. But definitely, I do want to agree wholeheartedly with the statement saying that I think it's sometimes for some of people that I know and certain individuals, I think it is difficult for them in trying to, I guess, cope with how when certain things happen, they definitely sympathize with, you know, people who are struck by tragedy, by unfortunate events. But I think that the blame or them having to feel responsible for that, I think that stereotype or that situation is something that needs to be taken care of, I guess. I don't know the best way how that happens, but I think I definitely see the parallel.
I think it's by downloading our film on iTunes. That's the best way, Muhammad.
No, but
Muhammad,
you know,
Salam. Sorry, go ahead, Nikki.
No, and Muhammad, I think one of the things that you're saying, which is really awesome, is that you're talking about having friends and how you and your friends do this and that. And that's one of the things I think that's really important for any, you know, Muslims in the diaspora to, like, keep in mind is that the onus is as much on us as it is on everybody else to build community and to come out of the closet as a Muslim, because I think this is something, you know, that the gay movement did really, really well, which is just like, let people know. And I remember, like, when I went off to college, my parents were like, you know, don't tell people you're Iranian, you know. And I was like, dudes, cat's out of the bag. You named me Nagin Farsad. They're gonna know something's up. I can't pretend like that's a Dutch name or whatever, you know. And so for me, it's always been like, let everybody know. Let me be the positive representation. And I think part of that is literally making friends, having friends, and yes, having fun with them, treating things with a lightheartedness, the way that any group of friends would. And that is going to do so much. I think those kinds of small gestures are going to do so much.
Yeah. So you can see this on iTunes. Is that what you
yes,
said?
Yes, and Amazon.
Okay.
It's available on
Apple.
It just came out 2 weeks ago. iTunes,
fine.
Amazon. And cable video on demand almost across the country. Comcast is the last one. That'll be in a few weeks. Almost every other cable provider. You can get it for $3.99, $4.99. It's cheap. You're going to have fun.
It's fun.
You'll learn some stuff.
You're going to, by the end, you're going to just be in love with Muslims in a way that you had no idea.
Love.
Oh, my God. Inappropriately in love with Muslims.
How does this play? I'm wondering if, I know you've done comedy all over the world, Dean, and maybe you have too by this point, Nagin, but Dean, I know you have. Are we more hip here in the United States? Does this play differently if you're, you know, in China or if you're in Saudi Arabia, if you're in New York?
Well, do you mean the film or comedy in general?
I don't know if the film's been shown, but I know
it hasn't been shown. That's an interesting thing to find out how it.
Comedy.
I've done a lot of shows across the Middle East. I've done shows in Egypt, Lebanon, the West Bank, where my family's from, Saudi Arabia. I've done twice. I've done shows over there, and I've done them with American comedians like Gabriel Iglesias, who's Hispanic American. I've done shows in Saudi with him and with Russell Peters, who's Indian, Canadian comedian. The audiences over there, thanks to YouTube and the internet, are very, very aware of entertainment media. They watch The Daily Show. They all know Jon Stewart. They like Jon Stewart a great deal. And they also follow our news, I'd say arguably closer than many Americans follow it, because our foreign policy does have an impact on their daily lives. So they follow it very closely. And now there's a great emergence of young Arab comics in the Arab world, including Saudi Arabia and Egypt. In Muscat, Oman, Dubai, there's a growing number of comics performing mostly in English, but some in Arabic as well. It's becoming very, very popular. And a lot of them are using YouTube in a very effective way to get their message out there as comedians. And there is a political one. There is the Bassem Youssef, who's the John Stewart, they call him, of Egypt, who talks about politics. And John Stewart was actually on his show a few months ago when John was filming his movie that was shooting in the Middle East. So comedy's emerging and it's bringing people together, and I think it's great over there to see that happening.
And I like Jon Stewart's comments in your film as well. He says some wise things, don't you think, Nagin?
Oh, my God. I mean, Jon Stewart is, I think, has been a tireless advocate through comedy of so many issues. Mm-hmm. And this has been one of them. And so, and it also, like, it makes a huge difference, I think, from the point of view of a viewer to see someone like Jon Stewart making those points. We can say whatever we want, you know, till we're blue in the face. But for Jon Stewart to just say something once, it sits much stronger. Like for Jeanine Graffel, for David Cross, for Lewis Black, for Rachel Maddow, for these kind of beloved figures of American comedy and American broadcasting, to say something has so much, I think, weight with it. And, you know, that's why it was so important for us to try, you know, to get these people that are literally our favorite people in the world. I think it has made an immeasurable impact on the film.
Let's go to Joe in McGregor. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I like to say being negative is easy. It's lazy. Say I don't like it, I'll ignore it. But being positive is much harder. I say I want to understand it. And when you become familiar with something, the fear and uncertainty can go away. I think comedy is a perfect vehicle because you can get someone to laugh about something they're afraid of. Mm. It throws it back at them to analyze that fear. If I laughed at it, why am I afraid of it? Because basically most phobias are self-inflicted. I think it's a good vehicle to try to open things up for people who aren't receptive initially.
It's a great point.
Excellent point.
Yeah, and we agree 100% that it is. And we've seen there's such a rich history in America of comics using stand-up to raise issues. Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce, the late Bill Hicks, George Carlin, Chris Rock, and now Jon Stewart, and even Colbert was on a stand-up, but using comedy the same ways. Having people laugh at some of the ridiculous misconceptions, I think, breaks it down. It makes us feel better when you're laughing at them. And I think for the bigots, the true bigots, I don't mean just people who are misinformed. I mean the leaders out there who are spewing hate. The idea that people are now laughing at them when they watch our film makes me feel good because I know it's undermining their credibility. And that's their greatest fear. They want you to be mad with them or mad at them. They don't want you laughing at them. And I think when you watch this film and you see some of the right-wing people and in the context we're showing their exact quotes, but people are laughing at them, that's great.
And also, I think what's great about comedy is that it works in layers. So I don't know if you've ever had like a favorite comedy album or something, and you listen to it the first time, and something will be funny because there's like a fart noise or whatever, and then you go back to it, and you're like, oh wait, that joke didn't just make me laugh because it was scatological. It also had this other layer to it, and so it sort of like lives on as a conversation piece in your head, and also with other people, like people and we've seen this in screenings, is that people will like talk about jokes afterwards and what the joke meant to them and why did it speak to them or what were we trying to say or whatever and those kinds of things. And those are the conversations we love it that people have those conversations. And I think it's possible because comedy kind of works on so many different planes at once.
We're talking with the co-directors, producers, and two of the featured comedians in the new film, The Muslims Are Coming. It's very funny. Nagin Farsad is with us and Dean Obadallah. They are answering your questions about comedy and bigotry and combating bigotry through comedy and why there haven't been too many Muslim comedians and if we're going to see an explosion in the number of, well, we can't because there aren't as many Muslims in this country as there are other groups, but using comedy by different groups to combat stereotypes, to combat really a kind of hatred, which is one of the missions of this film, which is, by the way, very funny. Coming up in just a moment, what religion is this? If you would like to take this test, you can. If you want to call in, that it would be good. We already have a couple people who have written some things, and we will give those to Nagin and Dean in a moment. And you'll hear a little clip from the film where they put up a booth and people are asked, the passage is read from either the Old Testament or the New Testament or the Quran. What religion is this? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hour two of our program today, the executive director of Food and Water Watch, about her new book, Foodopoly, which examines the corporate consolidation of our food system and what it means for farmers and consumers. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Here we go. Which holy book stipulates that a girl who does not bleed on her wedding night should be stoned to death? Old Testament, New Testament, the Quran.
Oh, it doesn't bleed on her first night?
The Quran. I'll say Quran.
Quran.
That was a very quick answer. And why do you, why did you answer that way?
Because of women. The women are subject, you know, subjective to men.
It is the Old Testament. Deuteronomy, dude. Dude. Deuteronomy.
There's an awful lot of going into the Quran and looking for lines in scripture that seem violent or ugly in one way or another. And of course, what is never said is that these kinds of statements can be found in virtually all holy scripture.
This way, did you do this all over the country? Did you do these, what religion is this?
We did that one only in Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, my gosh. Birmingham, Alabama, of all places.
That was at Five Point South, right in front of the Highland Methodist Church.
On the buckle of the Bible Belt. That's where we were, the buckle of the Bible Belt, right there in front of a church. And no one knew our faith because we didn't tell them. We had a big sign in front. It had, you know, signs of different faiths there. So no one knew what our faith was. So it made it more interesting. We wanted to see people's honest reactions when we read them those portions of the scripture.
Yeah. All right. Here's Brad on Facebook who writes, when you read about Muhammad, you think, what kind of person would follow him or his religion? He was a polygamist who married Aisha at 6 and bed her at 9 when he was in his 50s. He marched from village to village threatening the leaders that if their village didn't submit and convert to Islam, his army would slay all of the inhabitants.
That's, you know, it's funny you hear that. The thing, some people are obsessed with Prophet Muhammad having a younger wife. I'm not sure when he bedded her. I'm not really, that's not part of the teachings. To be honest with you, Islam is about following God. Muhammad is not Jesus Christ. And by the way, Jesus Christ is a prophet to Muslims as well. It's not following Muhammad, it's following God. And that's what the religion's about. So it's about our connection to God. If you want to go through the Crusades, if you want to pick things out there, what the Crusaders did in slaughtering women and children, and say that's part of Christianity, I wouldn't say it is, but you can have someone make that same argument if you want to. The person has never heard of the Crusades, perhaps, but if they look them up and just Google the word Crusades, they would see horrific slaughtering of people, of men and women. We can go through it all day. It's about
which
today.
Is why the movie is actually great for your Facebook friend there, because the scene named That Religion in the movie addresses exactly this thing of like, right. I'm cherry picking these terrible things from the Quran and then I'm talking about them. Easily things can be cherry picked from every religion and shown, hey, look at how crazy this is, which goes to, I think what's nice is that what brings religions together is that they all have these crazy things in their texts. So in some sense, there's solidarity in the craziness.
Josh is our next caller. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Good. I happen to be Mormon, and as you were talking, I heard a lot of similarities, and you saying how you would have to answer or denounce all these extremists, these terrorists and whatnot. You know, there's people like Warren Jeffs out there that are doing bad things. And oftentimes I feel that we almost have to denounce that type of stuff. But my question to you is, you know, the Mormon Church for a number of years was kind of in the back burner of consciousness. But probably the past 10 years or so, through whether it's PR campaigns and whatnot, has gotten more into the mainstream. I wouldn't say that they're necessarily mainstream yet, but have gotten much more into the public consciousness as far as being out there and being willing to tell people, you know, hey, we're not as crazy as people think we are. Do you think anything can be learned or anything can be learned by the Muslims and how to maybe, you know, get more into the mainstream and get the message out there that, hey, you guys are not these crazy extremists and terrorists that some people think you are.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in the same boat. I think we'd have to be learning from each other at this point. But it's true. It's funny because when we had a tour stop actually in Salt Lake City, and what we did there is we held up a Hug a Muslim sign and right in front of the main temple there. So it's really beautiful, idyllic location, and we held up a sign and the Mormons just lined up like it was crazy. Just as the moment we thought they were done lining up, there'd just be more Mormons like on a line waiting to hug us. And the funny thing about it was they treated it as if it was like, this is what we do, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, we hug Muslims. Like they treated it like a civic duty to be warm to us. It was the most overwhelmingly kind and warm feeling I had as a comedian. I was like, I cannot handle these emotions that I have. I can't handle it. I can't handle it. Too much hugging, too much niceness. I can't. And so I think maybe part of that was the feeling of demonization that both groups feel. And there's like a little bit of kinship there of like, man, you've had it rough. Yeah, man, you've had it rough too. And so it's a little bit of a like, yeah, bro. Yeah. And that was, it was lovely. And I think it'll be interesting to see how both groups fare in the coming years.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much, Josh, for your call. Jim in Tomahawk. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a professor 44 years ago say to me in a class, all humor is the result of the humiliation and degradation of others. And that stuck with me for all of these years. And I'd like your comments, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
All humor is
a result of, yeah. So if you were ever picked on, that's why you become a comedian.
Yeah, I guess there's some truth to that, but everyone's gone through things in their lives. No one's life has been perfect. So you could always mine those difficult parts of your life to use humor. I have parts in my stand-up act that has nothing to do with being Muslim or of Arab heritage, just about life and the troubles and challenges of that. But I think certainly there is a genesis for some comedy coming from that and using comedy to turn things around a little bit.
And you know, like how many comedians were just like total nerd faces when they were little. You don't even have to be a part of like a, you know, any kind of particularly targeted minority group. Like so many comedians were just nerds and bullied and whatever. And so then it's not that they're mining that directly, but they're using comedy, I think, to cope with those things. And it just, they grow up doing that. So I think you'll find that a lot. And your professor was not wrong.
Thanks so much for the call, Jim. You really are kind of a one-person melting pot, Dean, aren't you? Because your background is pretty interesting. You've got this combination of things that you would think would be at odds with each other. And I'm wondering if it ever was in your life and if you can talk a little bit about your mom and your dad and who you are.
I have to go through more therapy to be able to speak about my youth.
I can't articulate that thing.
Now, my mom is Sicilian. My dad's Palestinian. My father comes from he was born in what was then Palestine. Now it's known as the West Bank. My mom was born here, but her parents from Sicily. She's very Catholic. My dad's Muslim. I was raised with both faiths growing up. There really was never an issue, honestly. And as I talk about in the movie, I mean, I grew up in a town that was almost all Italian-American, and the teacher asked me to bring my father to school for show and tell so they could see an Arab Muslim man, which was a great way of exposure.
Right.
Yet today, if you did the same thing, I think there would be some objections. In fact, there was an article I just saw before I came here. Alabama, in a school system, they're teaching Arabic, and there are people objecting, going, you're trying to make our children Muslim. Arabic and Muslim don't mean the same thing. There are Jews who are Arabs. There are Christians who are Arabs. You know, but some people are so afraid of Arab or Muslim that, you know, you have those issues. And you know what? Going back to my grandparents came here at a time, turn of the century, where being Italian was not good. They were demonized for being Catholic and Italian, discriminated against, just like the Irish before them. So, I mean, in America, we see this evolution. It takes exposure and time. And ultimately, I have all the confidence in the world in my fellow Americans that they, you know, when it comes to the bottom line, they embrace American values over hate. But it takes a little time.
Mm-hmm. And your parents, there is some comedy, of course, that would have to be directed at your upbringing, too. Would you say that they are a little bit more old-fashioned, Nagin, than you?
Yes, 100%. I mean, they're, you know, it's not even that they're old-fashioned. It's just that they grew up in a completely different cultural reality and that and had this dream to move to the United States, managed to pull it off, built a life here, and still had the many, many years of cultural knowledge embedded in their psyches, you know, and right. So and that, and I think they came from a they're from a different era, they're from a different country, and I think over the years it's so interesting to see kind of my parents evolve and become right. more and more and more American as the years go by.
Thank you both so much. We are out of time. Thank you. It was a wonderful film. Really enjoy it.
And we'd also like
thank you. We thank Nagin Farsad and Dean Obadallah. And their film is The Muslims Are Coming. It has just been released. You can get it on iTunes and several other places. And thank you.